So dear global citizens, today we are going to be doing something a little bit different. You will be learning with a learner just like you, but who has achieved an incredible native-like level in English. So my guest today is our content manager here at Real Life English, Izzy Mignot.
We're trying to help people understand each other, literally and figuratively.
What's the whole story? So maybe we could just start from the beginning. How did you get started learning English?
I think there's two answers to that.
So Izzy is a Brazilian from Recife, but most people are super impressed when he speaks English because he sounds just like a native from the United States.
That's when I noticed, like, this is in English, so maybe I can learn it.
But Izzy has never taken a course. He's never opened a textbook. He never formally studied English grammar.
I think it was just because I started to think about my life in the future, where I would live, you know, and then I started thinking, like, maybe I'm going to move, you know, live in the United States or Canada.
When he was 22, he actually got the opportunity to go and work in Washington State in the Northwest United States. But he already had a native-like accent before moving there.
I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but my method was pretty simple.
So Izzy was kind enough to join me on the podcast today and to share all of his secrets with you of how he got this native level in English without any textbooks, just by living it.
And that's when I noticed, like, I can do this.
Aw, yeah, boys and girls, citizens of the world, this is Ethan from Real Life English, where every single week it is our mission to take you beyond the classroom to speak English confidently and naturally, connect to the world, and of course, use your English as the doorway to achieving your greatest life. All right, Izzy, so I thought that we could kick it off, get a little bit loosened up with a game. I took some inspiration from Ellen, from the Ellen Show. She has a segment called Burning Questions. So I thought this would be a fun way for us to warm up and also for myself and the audience to get to know you a little bit better.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
If you could eat only one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
The classic rice and beans, Brazilian rice and beans.
Rice and beans.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's a good one. I would probably go for pizza, especially if you can vary upon it. If you can do different ingredients, different toppings, then that'd be a good life.
I thought about it. Like, if you asked me, pizza, it is my favorite food. But I think just like you can easily get sick of eating pizza every day, even though you can vary with the toppings. But rice and beans, at least I have the actual data that I haven't gotten sick of it, even though I eat it almost every day. So
that's probably healthier too. All right. Question number two. If you were stranded on a desert island and could only bring one book, which would you bring?
This is an easy one. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
I thought about the same one, but then I'm thinking, okay, if I'm stuck on this desert island for the rest of my life, would the best choice be something for self-development? Because, like, who am I developing myself for? That's an amazing book, but it's like developing yourself to interact better with other people, to work together, to be a better human being, right? So I also thought about maybe I need an alternative, like a fiction. So that's really challenging as well. But one I thought about is Across the Nightingale Floor by Leon Hearn. It's one I recommend a lot to people. I haven't read it in a long time. It's part of a series. It's fiction, but it takes place in feudal Japan. So that would be interesting to revisit.
Well, in that case, I don't know if this is cheating, but I'd bring The Lord of the Rings, because I know it's one book,
that would be
right?
A good one.
Yeah, like there's the 3 movies, but it is actually one very long book. So I'd bring that one.
I probably need to choose something longer. Yeah. All right. What song are you most likely to select at karaoke night?
Upside Down by Jack Johnson. Upside down, I'll find the
things they say just can't be found. Oh, nice. I was going to go for Chandelier by Sia, was the thing that came to my mind. I can't belt like Sia for sure, but it's a fun one. What's something every gringo should know about Brazil?
That it is a vast country in many senses. Like that you go to a place that's probably going to feel like a different country if you go somewhere else, like 300 kilometers away, it'd already be like a completely different country. So don't judge like cultures by their cover.
Mm-hmm. It's not just samba and soccer and carnival, right? There's a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Even though those are real, like Brazil is traditionally known for those things, but it's because they're probably everywhere. Mm-hmm. But the local cultures have like more, like I guess, stronger things about the places.
I don't know why the first thing that occurred to me from as a gringo who lived in Brazil, one thing that popped in my mind is I used to like to go to eat pastel, and at least the kind of like cheaper pastel places in Belo Horizonte, that they'd have these napkins that are like made of plastic, so they don't actually absorb the grease from the pastel very well. And that's something that popped into my mind.
Yeah, those are horrible. Like, I don't know who came up with that idea, because like usually you'd buy those at those like street markets, right?
Mm-hmm. I used to go to a place called Heiru Pastel. They have several locations in Belo Horizonte. They're pretty famous. All right. The last question is, what is the most annoying mistake that most English learners make, in your opinion?
Most annoying. I think the ED at the end of sentences, Brazilians, they make that mistake a lot. Uh-huh. So it's like saying, for example, instead of, give me one example.
Baked.
Yeah. Baked. And because it completely changes the word and the stress. So
instead of saying washed.
Washed. And then because there's other, I guess, words in English that could sound just like that one, or word chunks, it almost makes me feel like there's an it there, like wash it. And then kind of throws me off there. It's like, wait, no, that's a different word. Washed.
That's a good point. I was going to say the same thing, so that saves us another explanation. That's funny that it's both of our pet peeves. All right, so let's get into today's main topic. We're going to dive into your story, Izzy, about how you got to your current level of English, which hopefully listeners are already admiring, and what it takes to get to a native-like level of English. So my first question for you is, what's the whole story? So maybe we could just start from the beginning. How did you get started learning English?
I think there's two answers to that, or two moments that I could say that I started. So the first moment was when I started consuming things in English, and the second moment when I started to actively learn English. Those two moments are essential. Actually, even if you think about the real life way, we talk about living it and activating it. So I guess the moment I started to live it was, man, like I was really young, I think maybe 5 or 6, although I didn't know I was living my English at that point, because I wasn't really consuming the things directly in English. There would be a lot of subtitles in Portuguese, but at that point, I was already watching movies with subtitles in English. But most importantly, I think what happened at that point was that I connected with things that I really liked in English. Video games, for example, and not just any kind of video games, but strategy, computer video games like Age of Empires.
I played that as a kid too, with my brother.
A lot of history, right? It's really interesting, really fascinating. If you like history and cultures, it's so visually interesting and appealing. So I connected immediately, and then later on with music.
You said movies, and you were 5 or 6. Do you have any memories, certain movies, certain series that you enjoyed when you were a kid?
Yeah, like Star Wars. I don't even remember watching the dubbed version ever. So maybe, actually, yeah, I do. But like once, Han Solo had a very interesting voice in Portuguese. But in general, I would say that, yeah, like Star Wars, and I mentioned Lord of the Rings as one of my favorite books, like novels, and the movies too. I think they're total masterpiece. So the classic ones, the trilogies. I'm a big fan of the trilogies.
Those trilogies are great because they get you hooked. I think for a lot of people it was Harry Potter, right? At least people our age, people who are younger. Maybe for some people it's more the books or more the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask, I don't know how old you were too with like the video games. Did this go on for most of your childhood and adolescence, teenage years?
I think so. And it even developed into other areas of my life. I started to develop games on the computer that were online communities that I'd be a part of. And yeah, I'd have friends and we'd develop games together. So I was more like doing the graphic side, the visual side of the game, right? The graphics, but I still develop a bit. So I think, yeah, it's always been present. And to this day, I still play from time to time something. I even still play Age of Empires, actually. It was the first game I ever played and probably my favorite game to this day.
Has there been a reboot?
Yeah.
Like a newer version?
Actually, yeah. I mean, there's been different versions, like 2, 3, 4, which advanced through the eras, right? The ages. Mm-hmm. But it has also been remade. So Age of Empires 2, which covers like the medieval times, not ancient times, but medieval times, that it's been rebooted. It looks really good, HD and all.
Amazing. I might have to get back into that, try it sometime. But I wanted to comment on how you were saying that you were already living it. You were consuming a lot of materials, movies, and this might be a lot of people's experience, even if they weren't learning with it so much, but at least they might have watched movies or TV series in English with subtitles in their native language. But it's quite another thing to actually start using the language to speak and everything. So how was that transition for you to go from it just being something that you used to consume things that you enjoyed, like movies and video games, to actually being something that you felt like, okay, I can have a conversation, I can connect with someone using this language?
Yeah, it's interesting because I really didn't intend to be referencing the real life way in this conversation so much, but it just came to me that the reason why I initially connected with those things, like music too, I love rock music. So I play instruments, and my family, like my brother as well, like, so we're really big on music. And then later on, when I started to watch like TV series, I think it was just because I started to think about my life in the future, where I would live, you know, and then I started thinking like, maybe I'm going to move, you know, live in the United States or Canada. So I was like 14 at that time when I started like watching more movies and TV series with that idea of one day moving. And that's when I noticed like, I mean, this is in English, so maybe I can learn it. You know, maybe I can learn while I watch it. So there's always, why did I mention the real life way? Because I was already living my English. So at that point, I started to activate it with more intention and curiosity about what the language that I was seeing. But there was always a sentiment of connection with what I was consuming the whole time, starting with the games and then later on with music and now with American culture, I guess, initially with Friends. So yeah, Friends, by the way, that was the big one, the big TV series that I'd watch at that time. So
one thing I wanted to highlight here was that you had a vision for yourself already as being someone who could live abroad, live in Canada or the United States. And I imagine that gave you a lot of motivation and purpose to then put in more of the deliberate hard work that would be necessary to get to a level where you could live and survive abroad, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think vision is a key word here. Because I started to envision how things could be and how it could shape my future. So if I were like in that future, but see myself in that future, I'd have to also imagine like, okay, so how am I speaking? You know, how am I, what's the job I have? And for all of those things, I needed English. Yeah, I'd be living in that country. So I'd need the English that'd be more specific maybe for that job. And I was already thinking about technology, something about related. So I guess even like later on when I started watching like YouTube channels, there's a lot of like science channels and technology related stuff that I would consume too. So without knowing, I was already adapting my options there. I started to consume a lot of stuff that later on would be really useful. Like when I started here at Real Life in 2018, a lot of the vocabulary I had at that point was just because of that, you know, because of all those YouTube channels that I would follow.
Mm-hmm. That's why with Real Lifers, we like to borrow from Simon Sinek and have this whole start with why sort of springboard, so that even using this exercise that we've talked about on the podcast several times of asking yourself why five times, you ask, why do I want to learn English? Maybe to live in Canada. Why do I want to live in Canada so that I can offer a better life to my family? Why do I want to offer a better life to my family? And so on. You do this five times and you get to something that's much more specific, much deeper, much more motivating. Doing things like this that can help you to really connect to your purpose, which is, you know, a lot of people end up giving up halfway through or get stuck on that intermediate plateau. So it can help to push you through to really getting to that place of fluency and mastery.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to come back and ask you, because you said that when you were, I think you said you were around 14 and you had this vision for yourself living in North America, and you said that you started to activate more your learning. So what did that look like specifically, activating your learning with the series, movies, and so on?
Yeah, it's something that I still recommend people do. I talk about this every chance I have, that somebody says like, hey, I actually enjoy, you know, I watch Netflix and I'm already consuming things in English. So I always say this, like, now I just need to activate it. And I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but my method was pretty simple. I would watch, initially I was watching with subtitles in Portuguese. I even remember the series that I was watching was called Chuck. So I was watching an episode and I remember like I had downloaded subtitles in English, maybe accidentally, maybe on purpose, to remember, but I actually, you know, used subtitles in English and I could actually understand it. I got excited because, man, like maybe I don't need subtitles in Portuguese, and I'm starting to actually get a lot of the jokes, you know, a lot of the actual meaning there without the help of Portuguese subtitles. So then I realized, okay, can I do that with other series? And then my method became like, if I wasn't really getting it, I would watch subtitles in Portuguese and then the same episode of subtitles in English. And I guess a couple months later, a few months later, I was doing the same, but subtitles in English and then no subtitles. Like watching the same episode with subtitles in English and then turning them off like altogether.
You watch the series first in Portuguese and then in English with subtitles in Portuguese and then in English with subtitles in English?
Yeah, so it went from subtitles in Portuguese with audio would always be in English, of course. Mm. But step one is subtitles in Portuguese or in your native language if you're going to try this. So second step is subtitles in English, the same episode. And then third step is no subtitles, just audio, original audio in English. If you're just starting with doing this, you don't want to go from step one to three, like to three immediately. You probably want to just see how far you can get with understanding everything you're reading. And then if you're understanding everything you're reading, I think that's or almost everything you're reading, that's a very good point to make the transition from to be between step two and three.
All right. So we're going to talk about how you actually got the opportunity to move to the United States, but I was curious, is there anything else that you found to be essential for yourself in learning English and having success, at least getting to a somewhat successful level before moving to the United States?
Yeah. And I was even thinking before, like last night, I was just like reflecting a little bit on my life and how, you know, things have been happening and how I got to this point. And I noticed like there's always been adventure somehow. It was never something like that I was after, like adventure, like with this word, but ultimately that's what happened. So yeah, I went to the United States. That was a big adventure. I actually went a second time and I didn't have a lot of money at the time to actually do that. You know, like I think any grown up at that point that if they knew exactly what I was doing, they would probably say like, you shouldn't do this because you don't have like not even half of it. Amount of money you need to do it. But there's that. And then when I started teaching English, I didn't actually have the knowledge that I think is really required for me to teach. But I just started to, I mean, I had the knowledge, but I hadn't validated it. So I kind of started to validate it as I started to teach with friends and just like checking on Google, like if I'm typing something, if that is the correct way, because Google can do that. It really helps you with like spelling and grammar, I guess. So it was, we didn't have AI at that time, so it was my native friend Google. So another adventure, right? Like teaching without any experience, and I think at that point I had barely had any experiences for speaking either. So
you started teaching before you moved to the US for the first time?
Yeah, I started teaching, I was 19, so about 5 years after I started learning more actively. Mm-hmm. And I was already fluent because I knew I had the opportunity to speak with a couple people before actually applying for the job. And that's when I noticed, like, I can do this. You know, I can teach English because at least I can talk about my experience and mm-hmm. what I understand.
You mentioned that you'd already had some conversations with some people. So who were you speaking with before you started teaching?
Yeah. If I view my whole life as like a hero's journey, or at least that part of my life as my own hero's journey, those were some... like, how do you call that? Like, what do you call that? Like the sage or
guide, wise man.
Mm-hmm. So at least one of them, definitely, who was the person who actually told me, hey, you could teach. Because when I went to speak with them, I was just like wanting to do something because I had that dream. I wanted to one day live abroad to just have that experience at least. And he told me like, why don't you just start by teaching? You know, because then you can make some money and it'd improve your English too. So, and you have the English to teach, maybe you don't know it yet, but that would be great for you. So that was an interesting idea.
So these people that you spoke with before you started teaching yourself were Brazilians mostly?
Yeah. And then the other person was my cousin, a cousin of mine who, you know, had already traveled and I just wanted to see, you know, if I could speak some English. So just mm-hmm. use him as a person to test my English with.
That's interesting because so many people make the excuse that they don't know any natives, so they can't speak because they don't know any natives. And of course, nowadays, that's, well, first of all, you don't need to speak with a native, but even if you don't know anyone, if you don't have a cousin, if you don't have a family friend, if you don't have someone in your immediate circle in your country that you can speak with in English. You have the Real Life English app where you can simply press a button and instantly be connected to another person from another part of the world, discover their cultures, make friends from other places in the world, and of course be practicing your English. So anytime, anywhere you want. And it's absolutely free to download, free to have conversations every single day. So definitely check that out if you haven't yet. And you said you started teaching. So did you start at a school? Did you just find some private students? What was that like?
There was this school in Brazil. I started there, and then later I started having my own private teachers.
Private students, you mean?
Private students. So yeah, it was just a natural transition because I noticed like I had my own method, which I guess is very similar to the Real Life way, and it just worked that way. So it was just my journey in teaching and in learning about using English as a doorway also.
Yeah. And up to this point yourself, you hadn't really taken classes or studied at a school or studied from a textbook or anything like that?
No. Like, because when I received textbooks for teaching at the school, but I would only use them for the classes, and I was already fluent and I was just speaking. So I was just following, you know, the lesson plan that he was giving me, but I didn't learn with it. I guess like there were moments that I validated, like, it is true. Like, that's the way I speak. But I'm not saying that you shouldn't learn with books or that you're prohibited from using books, but that it is not necessary. Like, if you don't want to, if you even think about people in your own country, there's people who don't know how to read, right? They don't know how to read, mm-hmm. they don't know how to write, and they can speak maybe even better than some other people. They can communicate more effectively. So those people haven't even touched maybe like a textbook or haven't even gone to school. And what do you have to say about those people, right?
Yeah. Natives don't tend to know. They don't know how they speak. They just know that they speak, right? They don't know all the grammar. A lot of learners, a lot of people look for like a native friend or something because they think that's going to help them to improve. And it can. But in my own experience learning several different languages, natives are good, but they're not like a resource for you to actually ask questions and understand the details of the language better. Because usually you ask them, why do you say it like that and not like this? Or why is the way that I said it incorrect? They don't know. They just know that it doesn't sound right, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to actually talk to a teacher if you want to get more detailed answers like that. So you said you were using a method similar to the Real Life way. What did your classes you were teaching look like? Especially, I'd be especially interested probably with your private classes, because I imagine at the school, this was my experience too when I taught at a school, was that could be frustrating at times, was that they wanted you to follow the textbook. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes I found that the way that it was teaching it wasn't so natural, there'd be like, for example, the CDs that we'd have to play that went along. And she's like, this isn't a conversation that you're actually going to encounter. Like, it'd be so much better watching a TV series that it's also something that's scripted. But in general, it's more true to like a real life situation, right? So anyway, I'm going off on a tangent here. So I'd be curious, what did your private classes look like, Izzy?
It's interesting. Like people, like friends and even people here at Real Life say that I'm often a person who you can have deep conversations with. And I don't do that on purpose. It just happens that I'm interested in learning, like, why. First question that I ask. So if somebody tells me, hey, I want to learn English, just naturally, my first question is like, why? And there is probably reasons why that are, like, it's just taken for granted, right? Like, people don't have to explain why they want to learn English, because like maybe it's for their job or because of something they'll do in another country. But still, like, I want to know why, and there's a why behind that. There's all those whys. There's the five whys exercise that we talk about when reflecting about connecting your English to your why, to your identity. So that's how I started with all my students, and I'd from time to time reconnect with their why and just like talk about that again. And so that was the first similarity. Second thing was that I just didn't focus on grammar. I was more focused on speaking and just vocabulary and learning by living it, right? So I'd put them in situations where I didn't have to talk about something that was meaningful to them. So not just like give them situations like with maybe, like watch this TED Talk, because I've done that a lot too. Like watch this TED Talk, watch this episode of this series. But that was always for connecting with something in their lives, and I would end up talking about something that was related to their why. And from time to time, also, I would be like in every lesson or every class, there would be opportunities for fixing something in their speech or a word that was not used appropriately. So
yeah.
There we go. Connect it, live it, activate it.
I mean, you even came to us through, I believe, one of your ex-students, one of your ex-private students who was part of the Real Life English community. So it makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a great story. I don't know if I'm just summarizing it in short. This was, I don't think you'll mind, as a Rodrigo, an old student of mine. So, hey, Rodrigo, if you're watching this, I'll send this to you. He asked me, hey, check this out. So I found this course with the TV series Friends. So Rodrigo asked me, like, hey, should I get this? Because he was my student. So if it's like learning on the side, like with the course, maybe that would be, I'd have a problem with it, right? But I didn't, because that was perfect. If somebody had created that, like, why not? So I told him, just like, yeah, get it. And let me know how it goes. So I think maybe a month after that, I stopped teaching him because I went to the United States. But a year later, I think he sent me a message on WhatsApp, just like sharing, hey, so, you know, remember those guys that, you know, that created that course? So they're hiring for this position here. So just shared the email, and I guess that rest is history.
Nice. And by the way, you've probably heard us using a lot of advanced vocabulary and expressions that we're not actually taking the time to define right now. But if you want to learn all these and never forget them, then a great way for you to do that, again, is with the Real Life English app. So you can download it for free. You get an interactive transcript so you can follow along with the full conversation. And we curate vocabulary flashcards in every single lesson for you so that you can study these words and never forget them with spaced repetition software. So you have to check this out. This kind of software has been absolutely essential for me in every single language that I've learned to have the words that I need when I need them, when I get an opportunity to speak. So download it for free in your favorite app store. So we already brought up a couple of times, Izzy, that you got the opportunity to finally live your dream of moving to the United States. So can you explain how it came about that you got to work in the United States?
I was living in another town here in Brazil, Natal, with a friend, mm-hmm. and we had a company related to teaching as well. At some point, like, it didn't work out. The idea for that company didn't work out, and I realized, like, man, this isn't working out. Like, I gotta do the next thing. You know, I gotta do the thing that I've always wanted to do, which is like to live abroad or have that experience. So I remembered that I have that cousin, which, by the way, I've already mentioned that I spoke with years ago. That same person, he had already done this exchange program, and it was for college students to just travel, you know, in December and then come back in March and to have this work experience at there's ski resorts and all these places that needed help, you know, in the winter season. So. Yeah, so I asked him like how that went for him, and I ended up going to Washington State.
Like Washington, it's so for Brazilian, it's so far flung because it's not only is it the United States, but it's someplace that's with the climate is very different from Brazil. It's in the winter at least that it's very snowy up high in the mountains, something that you wouldn't have, especially from northeast Brazil, which is never cold during the year, right? You don't even need to own a jacket or anything like that.
Yeah, I only have jackets because I do travel, but I don't I never wear them here, so that's
people,
true.
People who live there and they don't travel, right?
Mm-hmm. So just to cover the part where I was actually hired, you know, to go work there, I applied for this position to work with like ticketing, right? So like selling tickets and passes or skiing, and this company, they told me that they only hired people who did the interview in Rio, like in person, and I was in Natal, mm-hmm. which is really far, so I need to actually travel, and it was expensive, you know, just to go there for an interview for an exchange program is kind of not something that you would do. So I just asked mm-hmm. him, like, but would you be able, you know, to just do this online, to do like an online interview exceptionally? And they said, like, yeah, like, why not? And it was great. Like the interview was really awesome. And I got the job and she asked like which position you want, because we connected really like nicely and there was like all these positions. So I decided to work with guest services. So I went there and I I worked for 3 months, and then came back, and then went again the following December.
So you got to live there twice over two winter seasons.
Yeah, because I talked about adventure, and I think that's the most important thing. Like when you have the opportunity to live your English, just take it and live it.
So people have been listening to you for a while, Izzy. They can hear that you have a very advanced level of English. Your accent, too, is really phenomenal. Like most Americans, I think, wouldn't know that you are not American, in fact. So to what extent do you owe living in the United States to the level that you have in English, your current level and your accent?
Yeah, I think I got to refine my English more when I was there. Maybe culturally, I think there's so much about culture that you get when you travel or when you speak with natives. But not only speaking with natives, I think when I came back, I connected more with media and content that I wasn't consuming before. And I think that also helped. So it was not even the fact that I went and had the experience there, but how things changed after I had gone there. Like I had this paradigm shift of what mm-hmm. existed, what was possible.
So our producer was just saying he would be interested to know as well. What was this transformation of going from sounding like a Brazilian? We talked earlier, right, about maybe a pet peeve of when people say baked instead of baked, right? Or cooked instead of cooked. So was there a point where you were struggling more with your accent, with pronouncing certain sounds, certain words? And how did you go from that to the accent that people are hearing today?
Now, it didn't happen when I was there. Maybe I got to refine some things, I could say. And I'm saying this just because I have actual recordings of me speaking when I was there, you know, and I got feedback from people, too, that I'd wear this. It's not a necklace. It's a...
a lanyard.
Here you go. So I'd wear this lanyard that said that had written Dallas Cowboys, which is a American football team. And they'd be like, oh, no, how'd you end up here? You're from Dallas, right? And well, then I knew, you know, but it wasn't something that it was never something that I thought about. Like my English has got to be like a native level that people shouldn't be able to tell and stuff. Mm-hmm. It just happened. And I think if I could say how I got here, I think it's just because of my passion for culture. And it's not something that is necessarily a goal that like all people should have, like all learners should have. But for me, I think it's more because of my connection with the culture, with American culture. But about your question, how did I sound, right, when I go there? Yeah, it was very similar to what you're hearing now, I'd say.
So that was even before you lived in the US. How did you develop that as a young person? How did you develop the native-like accent?
That's interesting. As a musician, I gotta say I have a leg up here, an advantage over other learners that I just get the sound and the musicality of the language more easily. And I think I just use that plus a lot of curiosity about the sounds, you know, too. Because it was mm-hmm. not just an ability, but it was powered by a value of curiosity, I can say, and culture. I wanted to actually connect with the accent and the language and the culture. So if you got those three together, like culture, musicality, curiosity, I think that's how I got here. That's my theory that I'm just thinking about now, but maybe there's something else.
Might need to be a new part of the real life way, right? That makes a lot of sense to me because I wouldn't pretend to say that I sound exactly like a native in any of the languages that I speak, but I think I get closer than other Americans do. Like people never know that I'm from the United States based on my accent, and Americans oftentimes have a strong accent that can give them away. And I think a lot of it is the things that you said about, I'm not a musician, but I love listening to music. And so it's always a really important tool for me in learning languages. So listening and singing along, I think that helps a lot. And obviously culture, I don't know if that actually helps with the accent, but that curiosity, it's motivation to improve that. And the curiosity is like a really big thing because I'll be listening to something. I find it interesting the way someone said something. And so I'll repeat it, you know, or if I'm talking to someone, I notice I pronounce something wrong and then they correct me or that I hear them say it in a different way, then I'll say it myself a few times. It's kind of trying to rewrite that fossilized mistake in my head. So that makes perfect sense to me. It reminded me too, we had Dao Zaness on the podcast a couple of years ago, who this is his whole thing, teaching English with music. Highly recommend people check out that interview. And he calls it the mimic method, but it's all about learning English with music, specifically through rap music, because he's created a method that through this, you can sound much more native-like. So I think that's really interesting for people who have not used music in their learning yet. It might be something to consider trying.
Rachel's English. She also does something similar, like the Benjamin Franklin exercise. I don't know if it's quite like Dawson's method, but she at least covers the ups and downs, you know, of the words and the moments of silence and breathing and pitch.
I would take that more to the curiosity that you said, because it's really getting granular about a short piece of dialogue and really getting into the nitty gritty, into the tiny details of how that person is speaking. Where are the ups and downs, and how are they pronouncing certain words? Where is their linking? Where is their morphing, and so on. But that's another really interesting thing for people to look up. We've been talking for a long time, Izzy, so it might be time for us to start wrapping up. But I did want to ask, maybe this is a final question. So it's been 7 years since you lived in the United States, and your English is still phenomenal. So one thing I want to ask, because I've met many English learners, and this goes for myself too. I studied in Germany in high school, and I got to a level where I was very fluent and confident. And nowadays, I couldn't maintain a conversation in German, because there's this saying that is very true, that if you don't use it, you lose it. I've met many English learners that this is the case. They get the chance to go to live in Canada or England or the US, and they get a very good level while they're living there. But then they come back and they get back to their normal life, and they lose it. So what have you done to maintain, or maybe you've even improved your English since those days in the last 7 years?
Again, I think it wasn't intentional, but it just happened that I never lost my connection with culture and what I experienced there. So I didn't want to stop. You know, I wanted to continue on my journey of getting to know people and things, ideas, concepts, and even places too, like from Recife. Like, I can use the internet for that. And it's such a powerful tool. I think people very often think that they can use the internet for learning English by like watching a lesson or something. But honestly, if you just do things in English that you would otherwise do in your native language, that's fantastic already. And just make sure that you're just following up on what you experienced there. So I feel like I never really lost my connection with American football, for example, even though I don't watch it so much these days. But every now and then I'll watch a game. And when it came back, I'd watch even more, you know. So if you have this sort of experience where you travel and you don't lose it, well, there's the expression, right? Like, if you don't use it, you lose it. So keep using it. And culturally, I think there is such a thing. You should also keep using that knowledge somehow. If you really like it, if it's really part of who you are, keep going with it. And if it isn't part of who you are, that's okay. Like, it's okay if you don't retain it, but seek those things that are part of who you are and make sure those things are coming in English, right? Like that you're seeing, consuming those things in English. So that's, I think, how I did it. And I think real life English was a big part of that too, because one thing that I've always been interested in is self-development. And to actually be, I think I've read way more books about self-development in English now, way more. And it's totally related, right? Because self-development is also a topic that it's kind of very meta, where you get to understand more about who you are, for example, like about purpose and all. And if I got to do that in English, it kind of like feeds itself. And now I'm seeing myself as a person who can even help others connect with their purpose and do exactly what I may be doing here, sharing about my experience in English.
You said it's very, learning English is very meta. I believe you mean by that it's sort of overarching. It affects many different things. It's integral in some sense.
Yeah. It's almost like the thing about the thing itself. Like, I'm learning English, and English is the thing that I think can take me places. But it is also the tool for communication. So I get to, teaching English is, for me, it's amazing, because I get to talk about self-development in English. And then if you learn both at the same time, it can really take you places, as I already said, you know, literally, but figuratively too. And I think this idea of like figuratively thinking about English and literally is interesting. I view our purpose of creating a world beyond borders. I have another way of putting it, of phrasing it to people, to explain it. So I say to people, to friends, family, that we're a company that we're trying to help people understand each other literally and figuratively. So literally, because we're trying to help people, like say somebody from Japan and somebody from Italy, to be able to speak with each other. And as a consequence, they get to understand more about each other, be more understanding. So you get the figurative sense there, where people start to be more understanding of each other and have more patience, have more, I guess the key word is understanding here. How would you phrase this? Do you have your own take on our purpose that you use for expressing this?
I always like the phrase, which we say at the end of each podcast, no matter what divides us, that which unites us is far greater. because this is sort of the utopic vision that if everyone in the world were that way, which we're not pretending to say that we're going to alone be able to do that or anything, but if some of us at least are able to have that, also goes back to Gandhi, like be the change that you wish to see in the world. We start seeing each other more as human beings, as less as, you know, you have a different religion than me, or you come from a different place, or you have a different sexuality, or you have a different whatever it is, and more as, you know, we're both people going through this difficult thing that is being a human being. All of us have really deep down the same struggles. You know, we want to be liked, we want to have friends, we want to, if we have kids, we want them to grow up and have a good life, you know, better opportunities than we did. We want to have fun, we want to be happy, we want to laugh, we want to have great eye-opening experiences, and so on. All these things, us as humans, we share. And the little things on top of it that have so many of us fighting and even like killing each other over, it goes to that. They're more superficial, not to belittle anyone's beliefs or anyone's anything, but I think that what unites us as human beings is just so much more fundamental, and it's what we need to focus on more.
Amazing. And I guess just to conclude, when you use English for connecting with people, that's the kind of effect that you get, right? And a feeling that it's a paradigm shift, as they call it. Mm-hmm.
So ending this podcast on a high note, of course, Izzy. So dear learner, if you are enjoying these lessons, if you are over on YouTube, you can hit the subscribe button, give this video a like. That helps us to reach more people here on YouTube. If you are listening to the audio, give us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you're listening to this that gives you that option. Because again, helps us to reach other people, costs you nothing. And remember that no matter what divides us, that which unites us is far greater. 1, 2, 3.
Aww, yeah. Joining us on this special episode today, all about vocabulary, is Justin Murray. Justin is the CEO and co-founder of Real Life English, along with Ethan. For you guys to have an idea, Justin has over 20 years of teaching experience, and he has taught in classrooms in Mexico, Guatemala, Colombia, Brazil, and the United States. He has also helped thousands of real lifers in our community speak confident, natural English. And of course, he leads the entire Real Life English team towards our vision of a world beyond borders.